This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Daniel Dickinson. In this week's programme, visitors to Angola are told to be vaccinated against yellow fever, following over 250 deaths there. And a 16-year-old Tanzanian girl has urged world leaders to act on climate change. But first, South Sudan's first vice president has returned to the capital, Juba, and has been reinstated into the government. Riek Machar's return will enable the formation of a transitional government of national unity and the full implementation of the peace agreement. His departure in December 2013, after being accused of attempting a coup against President Salva Kiir, triggered ethnically targeted clashes. Jocelyn Sambira has the details.
On his arrival at Juba International Airport, the first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan, Riek Machar, shared a message of peace.
The war was vicious. We have lost a lot of people in it. And we need to bring our people together so that they can unite, reconcile, and they heal the wounds.
The swearing-in of Dr. Riek Machar opens a new chapter in the peace agreement. South Sudan's ambassador to the UN, Joseph Mumalok, told members of the Security Council on Tuesday.
The swearing-in today of Dr. Riek Machar as the first vice president will be followed with the formation of the transitional government of national unity in a day or two after consultation with the different parties in the country.
The South Sudan peace process remains extremely fragile, Hervé Latsou, the Undersecretary General for the Department of Peacekeeping Operations, told the Council. More than half of the South Sudanese population is in need of humanitarian assistance following 2.5 years of conflict and economic decline, according to the UN. The fall of oil prices has pushed South Sudan to the brink of economic collapse, Latsou said. Human rights remain of grave concern in the country, and the scale of atrocities committed even after the signing of the peace agreement is unacceptable, the peacekeeping chief noted. Meanwhile, the government of South Sudan continues to impose restrictions on the movement of the UN mission UNMISS and that of humanitarian workers in violation of the Status of Forces Agreement. Here's Hervé Latsou.
These restrictions, I'm thinking in particular of those on night patrols in Juba, have severely impacted the ability of the mission to move and to protect civilians, as well as the ability of the United Nations to deliver humanitarian assistance, which is more than ever badly needed.
He urged the Council to send a strong message both to the government and opposition on the utmost imperative to grant the mission and humanitarian partners unimpeded freedom of movement. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
A yellow fever outbreak in Angola has killed over 250 people, and there are fears that it could spread rapidly unless preventative measures are taken. That's the message from the World Health Organization, WHO. The UN Health Agency is concerned that people travelling to and from the country have not been vaccinated against the disease, for which there is no cure. So far, the virus has also been identified in neighbouring Democratic Republic of the Congo as well as China, as WHO spokesperson Christiane Lindmeier told Daniel Johnson.
Since the outbreak in December 2015, we have 1,975 suspected cases of yellow fever and 258 reported deaths in Angola, mainly in the capital, which is, of course, biggest concern, and two other provinces. So this is Luanda and Huambo in Benguela.
What are the authorities doing? There is an obligation to be vaccinated for any travellers who are entering the country to get vaccinated. Obviously, that's not happening.
WHO and the authorities have ramped up a large-scale vaccination campaign that was launched already in February 2016, so this February, and has so far reached almost 7 million people. That is more than the population of the capital and even more than the official figures of the province, because many people come from the countryside and come to the urban area to get into the vaccination program. People are concerned. So, yes, we need to follow up on this. Education needs to get on the ground. People, especially in the Most hit provinces need to be informed about the risks of yellow fever, about how to protect yourself. Let's not forget there is no cure yet for yellow fever. Yellow fever as such, not many people develop symptoms, but out of those who do, a good half of them actually tend to die. So,
what are the symptoms? Can you tell me how it affects people?
The symptoms of yellow fever are similar like any other of these infectious diseases spread by mosquitoes. It's, of course, a fever, then also the yellow in the eyes, the typical jaundice, and it's a bit of a rash, and the elevated temperature. That's it. It's a very steep increase in temperature.
And life-threatening, obviously. And you're also concerned that it is spreading to other countries.
That is the issue, and this is why we put out a press release, and the Director General of WHO, Dr. Margaret Chan, is very concerned about the situation, because we have found that a couple of travelers from different countries have come into Angola without any proper vaccination, without any vaccination cards. So we have seen, for example, 11 cases now in China of travelers which came, workers actually, who worked in Angola, who have brought back yellow fever to China. Luckily, the situation in China right now is favorable to not have a further spread of yellow fever, because it's not a season for the mosquito. So it can be contained very easily still at this point. The Democratic Republic of Congo is another area which has now received lots of cases from Angola, and we fear another spread there. Of course, further on spread from Angola is possible. That is why it's so important to go to that country only if you're vaccinated and only if you're properly protected.
Does Angola have sufficient funds to treat as many people as need to be treated? You say there's already a vaccination program that's covered 7 million people.
The international community is working together here, so it's with the help of WHO also, but also from the ministry, of course, and funds from the ministry to bring vaccines into the country, to reroute vaccines which are aimed for other routine vaccination programs, and therefore feed the immediate need of a high number of vaccines. So the emergency stockpile, which is about 2 million doses, had, of course, been replenished again and again in order to satisfy those needs.
Daniel Johnson speaking to Christiane Lindmeier. A 16-year-old girl from Tanzania has urged world leaders gathered at the United Nations in New York to take action to reverse climate change. Gertrude Clement addressed the international community at the opening of a ceremony to sign a climate deal agreed by over 190 countries in Paris last December. She was there to represent the youth of the world. Joshua Umali spoke to Gertrude ahead of her speech in the General Assembly Hall.
I'm here in New York to represent children and young people all over the world about the issues concerned climate change.
So you will be speaking at the signing of the climate change agreement.
Yeah, I'll speak and address the readers to take action about climate change.
So beyond the signing, you want them to take action.
Yeah.
Why is it very important to you that they not only sign, but they also take action?
Because when they will take action, it will help for fighting against the climate change and to keep the children safe.
You're from Tanzania. Have you seen some of the devastating effects of climate change?
Yeah.
What kind of things have you seen?
Soil erosion and death to the other children.
How do the children die?
Because of heavy flooding.
Flooding.
Yeah.
Okay.
And security of livelihood and food.
Food security and livelihood.
Yeah.
So these are things that you have witnessed while working as a child reporter, a young reporter for UNICEF.
Yeah.
Have you done some stories about these things in Tanzania?
Yeah, we have visited many places which is affected by climate change and environmental pollution. Then we post to the digital map so that people around the world can learn about the experience. Also report to our live radio and TV program every Saturday.
So you seem to be very passionate about climate change.
Yes, because I see also the effect of climate change. So
are you excited about the fact that you're going to be the one speaking on behalf of the youth?
Yes. It's my first time, so I want to see the readers from different nations take action about climate change.
16-year-old Gertrude Clement speaking to Joshua Omali. And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Daniel Dickinson.